Welcome to another episode of the Editor's Podcast for the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. Today, Dr. Lloyd Novick, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal, highlights new research appearing in the July 2020 issue, which focuses on the COVID-19 pandemic, the public health crisis of our era. This issue of the journal, Dr. Novick, is a very important one as it focuses on COVID-19, which you call in the editorial of this issue, the public health crisis of our era. Can you talk about some of the challenges this pandemic has brought to bear upon our public health system in the U.S.?
This is certainly the public health crisis of our era. None of us has experienced anything like this. The only analogy is possibly the 1917-18 influenza pandemic. We're facing a challenge because this is a new or novel virus, so none of us have immunity to this virus. The solution to this problem would be a vaccine, but development of a vaccine is going to take another year to 18 months. So in the interim, we're faced with doing mitigation, social distancing, to try to bring the extent of the pandemic down to a level where we can contain it by using basic public health measures such as massive testing and contact tracing.
And Dr. Novick, I know you had a different issue of the journal lined up, but of course the urgency of COVID-19 preempts the publication of that regular issue. Can you tell us about some of the articles that readers will find in this issue on COVID-19?
Yes, we changed that July issue from top to bottom because, as we've said, this is the public health challenge now, and we feel as the leading public health practice journal, we should address this. So this issue has a series of commentaries as well as scientific articles, and all of the columns in the issue, the columns from ASTO, NATO, and De Beaumont, as well as our Management Moment column, focus on COVID-19. So we have commentaries, for example, on the clinical versus public health ethics that have been brought to bear during COVID-19. We're all aware of the clinical ethics of trying to adapt our limited resources, such as ventilators and other clinical resources, to patients. But there also is a shift here to public health ethics. How do we use our community resources? Using measures such as social distancing do interfere to some extent with individual liberty. How do we balance that? And when a vaccine does become available, we'll be facing decisions at first, like decisions we had with the influenza vaccine. How do we prioritize which groups do receive this vaccine? We also have scientific articles on the extent of this illness in children, and also two very interesting articles from China, one from Shanghai and one from mainland China, on how they have taken measures to contain the pandemic.
One study in this issue looks at CPIP scenarios to determine, quote, the true underlying infection rate of children in the United States, which has been underreported by the media. What are this study's findings and why are they so important?
Well, as of early April, there were 74 children who were admitted to pediatric intensive care units in 19 states. But what we have to realize is that those admissions to intensive care units are only the tip of the iceberg. As the authors of this article have pointed out, that for every admission of a single child with COVID-19 into a pediatric intensive care unit, there are approximately 2,500 other children in the community infected with COVID-19. they have estimated that there are 176,000 children infected in the United States already with COVID-19. They also have projected that almost 120,000 children will require hospitalization with severe COVID-19, and 13,000 of these hospitalized children will become critically ill and require intensive care unit admission. And this will outstrip our present capacity for COVID-19 in our hospital system.
Another study looks at the feasibility of social distancing in U.S. schools to reduce influenza transmission during a pandemic. Their findings suggest that schools may have other options to increase social distance other than closing. Are these findings feasible in the current COVID-19 pandemic as well?
Yes, so although this study was originally done with the intent to look at influenza, these findings about social distancing apply to the COVID-19 pandemic. And these findings are relevant when our schools reopen in the fall, particularly for elementary schools. They recommend social distancing techniques in schools that are open by limiting periods of time that children spend in the halls, by staggering recess times, and taking other measures so that there is less interaction in the schools between children by limiting the class schedule. So these lessons are important when schools do reopen because they can lessen the risk of the school opening by introducing modest measures of social distancing.
A commentary by Gulzar Shah and his colleagues highlights the exacerbated burden of COVID-19 and its aftermath on the elderly, the chronically ill, communities of color, rural communities, and other populations that are disproportionately impacted by this pandemic. The authors outline a number of actions that local and state health departments can take to help mitigate the cross-cutting consequences of worsening social determinants of health. Can you describe some of them?
It's become apparent that people who are over the age of 65, particularly those with comorbidities, are at increased risk from this illness caused by this coronavirus. It's also become apparent that African Americans are at increased risk. For example, in Chicago, 50% of COVID-19 cases and nearly 70% of COVID-19 deaths involve Black individuals, although Blacks make up only 30% of the population. Moreover, these deaths are concentrated mostly in just 5 neighborhoods on the city's south side. In Louisiana, 70% of deaths have occurred among Black persons, who represent only 30% of the state's population. Again, this is due to comorbidities. It's also due to the fact that people of lower socioeconomic groups and minorities have more difficulties in social distancing, which mitigates the effects of this pandemic. The recommendations here are to pay particular attention to these groups, to bring about more resources. Increased testing and contact tracing will be particularly important in these communities.
Another study in this issue finds that the lack of indoor plumbing, non-English speaking households, and the prevalence of overcrowded houses on American Indian reservations demonstrates a strong positive relationship with COVID-19 cases in this population. Can you discuss the author's recommendations in this study?
Yes, that's correct. These authors studied the incidence of COVID-19 at various Indian nations, and they found out that in households which lacked indoor plumbing and also where they were non-English households, there was a greater risk of COVID-19. And the recommendation here is that educational materials, that communication and outreach must address this problem and address it using indigenous language.
You mentioned previously a number of columns that we publish regularly in the journal. Can you talk a little about the columns in this issue?
Yes, we have four excellent columns in this issue. We have two outstanding columns on leadership in this time of crisis. One of these is written by Michael Fraser. That's our ASTO column, State of Public Health. The other column, which makes many of the same points, is our Management Moment column from Edward Baker. We also have a column from the Beaumont Foundation written by Karen Remley and a co-author. Dr. Remley was a former state health official in Virginia, and they talk about how to support the workforce during this critical time, addressing issues such as burnout and how the workforce can work virtually from home. And our NACHO column, NACHO News, addresses communication with the public. Risk communication at this time is of critical importance.
How has JPHMP responded to the urgency of this pandemic in disseminating reliable information to state, local, and tribal health departments and their communities?
We've been able to gather these commentaries and scientific articles. We have used expedited review for the scientific article. In several cases, we've been able to get reviews on these articles in 4 to 5 days. We recognize the importance of this pandemic to our readership. So presenting this material, which is contemporary, is of the utmost importance. This complements what we've been able to do on JPHMP Direct, our companion website, with our posting of current information and podcasts, and also putting out information about the articles we are publishing in the current issue of our journal.
Well, Dr. Novick, thank you for your time. This is certainly an important issue that I know our readers will really find valuable. This feature has been brought to you by JPHMP Direct, the companion site of the Journal of Public Health Management and Practice. To read the July 2020 issue of the journal on COVID-19, visit us online at journals.lww.com/JPHMP.